Hello, friends. I am Cindy Thompson, and this is a Resilience Project. This is a space where stories are shared and possibilities are discovered. I invite you to partner with me in cultivating resilience among humans, one conversation at a time. Do you have a resilience plan? This is not something we typically think about. We consider life insurance, house insurance, and likely even have a first aid kit tucked away somewhere just in case we need it. For some people, they might just trust that they will deal with challenges in the moment, with very little forethought to strategies that might be helpful proactively. If I were to suggest a resilience plan is just as important as your emergency first aid kit, what might change your mind on the value of having a plan for your well-being? Are you someone who ignores that dashboard light on your car when it comes on? What would be the personal flags that you would look for that indicate you are not managing as well as you could be? Like the dashboard light on your car, what if you regularly saw your resilience as something to be maintained and assessed regularly? Ideally, before you hit that wall. My guest this week, Dr. Marie-Helene Pelletier, is an award-winning workplace mental health expert, psychologist, advisor, and speaker. With a PhD and an MBA, she has a unique ability to combine clinical, counseling, and workplace psychology for a robust understanding of personal and workplace well-being. As the author of her newly released book titled The Resilience Plan, Dr. Marie-Helene is inspiring us to develop our own resilience plan. I thought it would be helpful to mention that Dr. Marie-Helene suggested I refer to her from here on in as MH, as she is most familiar with among friends and coworkers. And here is my conversation with MH. MH, I'm so pleased that you are here today on a Friday recording on a resilience project with me.
It's my pleasure to be here.
I feel like even though I've been meeting several people over the last 2.5 years, it never gets old. There's always some new information. There's always a new take on resilience. I love learning from my guests, and whether it's someone sharing their personal story or someone who's become an expert in the field of resilience and helping others, I just am so excited to partner together in this conversation.
Wonderful. Same here.
I understand that you are doing a lot of work helping organizations, helping the well-being of people in those organizations, and you have made it a bit of a mission for yourself to do what you can to grow resilience in the workplace.
Absolutely. Yes. And the more we can take them, the more we can, frankly, save visits to the psychologist's office down the road. And the more we're proactive, we can stay in the thriving, better space that we all prefer to be in longer. And if we are moving towards a not so thriving place, we'll return to it faster if we've been more active on the prevention.
So yes. Prevention, early intervention. That's what we're about here. Yeah, so good. So what inspired you to pursue resilience as a specialization?
I think it's a combination. Love my field of origin, psychology, and understanding how humans function and how we can help them function and live and feel even better. Part of my early experiences in my career led me to a very small mining town in northern Quebec because my husband, Nick, was working as an engineer in a mine. Mm. What that led to is lots of opportunities to work with a variety of people in a variety of contexts. One of them was employee and family assistance program. This is a couple of decades ago. And no one would have ever called a psychologist to talk about what they were talking to me about. But because it was an opportunity through their employee and family assistance program, confidential, free, easy to access, that made me love it even more and want to do even more in that direction.
So starting out as a psychologist first, and then discovering the impact you can have in these workplaces to be able to access more people, more prevention, I can hear that that kind of was like a spark that got ignited there.
It absolutely was. Ultimately, what most psychologists want is for people to be even healthier from a psychological perspective. We all work at different places on this continuum and in different ways, but it's the general direction. For me to discover and to see in action the power of what our field could bring was just incredible and even more motivating to do more, which led to all kinds of other things after that for me in ways in which I worked to bring it to even more people. But yeah, that was a spark for sure.
What I hear is just a reminder that sometimes we start somewhere and we don't really know what that might even bring us in our careers, but to say yes and just try it out. If you hadn't moved there, I wonder if your path might have gone in a new direction or a different direction. But it's pretty sweet to hear how life unfolded even for you, MH. Even as you tell me and remember 20 years ago what that was like for you personally, I just see you light up in your passion for this work.
Yes. Yeah, it's very true. It is how other things after that for me unfolded. Sometimes people ask, how did you decide to get to a point or where you would do the type of research you did for your doctoral research and then the combination with other things you did after? It in part was following my nose, literally being on a certain path, looking at what seems like a logical next step for me to take and taking it. And at times surprising people around me who were not seeing that this was the potential next step. But that has worked well for me. And there we are.
So when did you know for sure? This is definitely the field I want to dive into deeper, because then you went and did your MBA after that.
Yes, it just happened literally organically, Cindy, because from that small mining town over there, Nick and I moved to British Columbia, the other end of the country. I had the objective there to do my doctoral degree, which ended up being in telehealth, which is now a few decades ago. Again, so it was very early then to provide therapy via video conferencing. However, in order to do this type of research at this time, you needed to have a lot of financial support because the technology was needed. And I also needed to recruit and maintain a team of volunteers on a stable basis to make the research valid. That meant, in the end, just a lot of management. I did my study, enjoyed it. It was considered pre-embryonic at the time, very early stages, but I loved it because it involved such a large amount of management and leadership through this, that at some point I said, oh, wait a second, I like that. How could I do this more? That's where I decided to do the MBA there. Even then, it became conversations with professionals and leaders I would work with, keynotes I would be asked to do, and the topics related to resilience would often emerge as I started delving even more in the research in this area and bringing it more public speaking work and in my work with individuals. That's how it became an even larger part.
It's a reminder that we've always needed resilience. I know that you and I have spoken briefly about how many organizations have really been promoting it, particularly since the pandemic. And yet people are sort of feeling like they're tired of hearing about it, as if we're over that. But as you just suggested, you've been talking about this for several years, that there's been a need in organizational health for resilience, for well-being. That's how you've been diving into it and why you've been diving into it, because there's been a need. This isn't new.
You're right. It isn't new. And you're also right that we're hearing different reactions to the concept, or more the word, frankly. Because it's not so much the concept itself, it's the word and some things that people associate with this word. I think we're almost like starting to see the shift on the other side now, but very understandably, a lot of what I'm hearing when people are having a negative reaction or a I'm not so sure reaction, it usually is related to a belief or sometimes what they've been told, but somehow a perception that resilience is about making an individual stronger, tougher, so that they can sustain a toxic, unhealthy environment even more. One of the analogies that some authors have been using is, I think, a very good one, because the reality is when we're looking at workplace mental health, we're looking at a system. Yes, there is the individual, there's the team, there's the organization, there's even the country that this organization operates in and this moment in time. So it is a very large, complex system. The analogy that some authors have been using is that when coal mines used to send a canary down to make sure the air is fine, if canary comes back, we can go and work. What's been said is, if we're working only on the individual resilience, as if we're trying to make this canary even tougher, it's toxic down there, but canary's coming back healthy. And it really gives a visual for how this is a system, not just individual. We're not birds. Mm-hmm. We do have more agency, more influence. And that's what I say when I work with groups on their individual resilience, keeping in mind there is the rest of the system here. Most of the time, this is a relationship and there are opportunities for things to evolve in better directions at a number of places in that system. Even if somehow the entire problem resided in the work environment, we would still need as individuals to have the highest possible resilience we can so that we can make decisions. To handle it, we need to be as strong as possible. And more people are also seeing that fuller picture and finding again some kind of better perspective on all the parts of this system.
Yeah, that's a great visual. And I agree with you. I saw a great quote recently where it said, really, resilience is about getting stronger. It's about getting smarter in how we look after ourselves, the strategies we use. Are you seeing some new trends since the pandemic, through the pandemic? What do we need now?
To see our overall health in a much better integrated way. So we already knew from research and practice before that when we're thinking about our health, we for sure want to think about physical, mental, and financial health all together. And yes, there are many other aspects of health, but to simplify it in three key areas, we used to see that already. We're seeing it more and more. It's as if as people have started paying even more attention to their psychological health and the integrative aspect of it with our physical and financial health is becoming clearer. I had the chance to attend a fabulous continuing education webinar between the American Psychological Association and the American Nutrition Association, and just showing the latest research on the impact of our nutrition and the gut health on psychological health. This is emerging. I think we're going to see even more of this and other areas as we continue to move forward. The other piece that I'm seeing more and more, which of course I love, is as everyone is increasing their own literacy, comfort, changing cultures related to psychological health, everyone has more information. Everyone is becoming also more discerning, asking questions, wanting research in very useful directions. If we know about it and implement it, I think it's good for all of us.
Do you find that people are more likely to advocate for themselves? Are people becoming more likely to reach out and ask for help in their well-being within organizations?
In general, as a group, people are thinking about it a bit more for all kinds of reasons. If you are a parent, your children are hearing about it way more in school and talking about it now. It's all around us. If you are in an organization that has made it part of their mission statement, then this organization likely also has leaders within the organization who have established trust from their team members in a number of ways, whether it's expressing at times their own struggles, their own vulnerabilities. The walk needs to follow the talk. We know from research that it will be a predictor of whether the individual here will speak about their needs potentially better met in the organization.
I can appreciate that was a complex general question, but we have more millennials in the workforce. And my sense is they're more likely to want more work-life balance. They are going to not tolerate the workplace in the same way. They're going to leave if they're not happy. It just made me wonder about some of the trends that might be happening as a result of this new wave. I know we've had conversations with our adult kids who are 27 and 29 around they don't want to do it like we did it. We work hard, we work long hours, and we do what we love. But at the same time, they look at how busy we are and they think, I don't want that kind of life. I want to enjoy my life. I want to take more trips, more holidays. I hear it even within our kids and that generation coming up as to what they're needing in life. That sounds like a great platform for well-being, that they're more likely to be looking at what they need.
Yes. Yes. Wonderful. You're having these conversations with your kids. I'm having mine as well with my son, Alex. We see it from the younger generations entering the workforce. It is such a strong value for them that we better get on board. Otherwise, they're not coming or they not staying, to your point. The beautiful piece, of course, is as other generations are looking at, they're saying, oh, actually, yes, works for me too. And it is aligned with the overall direction where we would want to go to have even more psychologically healthy workplace. It's wonderful. We are building engagement. We're allowing for them to grow their career, whether it's here or somewhere else. It makes everyone want to give their best, knowing that there will be other opportunities coming forward as we move towards the future. So it's, I think, very inspiring.
I think that it's a great conversation to be having, no matter who the listener is, at whatever stage of the career that they might be at. I'm always about drawing out some skills, some ways that we want to think about our well-being. Maybe we can dive a little bit more into some gauges, some things that we need to be watching for in our well-being so that we are catching it early and not waiting till we hit that wall or burn out. Would you mind sharing some things that come to mind for you that you would want employees or anybody to know? We're not just talking organizational health here. We're just talking about human beings. And what do we need to be looking for so we're not just ignoring those indicators early on?
A great part of this conversation, because as we go upstream, go a bit earlier, go proactively, we will be able to catch things before they get more intense, which catching them there is still better than any time after then. But the earlier, the better. It's just like physical health. Sometimes part of what will make us not catch things early and proactively is because we are not paying attention to the signs. The signs were there, we were just not paying attention. Why were we not paying attention? What I'm hearing depends from individual to individual, but often there is a notion, you referred earlier to how you did it differently than your kids will do it, that you were just working hard and putting your head down and working. Sometimes that is the belief that people have developed for whatever reason. It could be because they were in a generation where that was the way most people were doing it. But sometimes it's just coming from another place of developing that belief. For example, I've worked with a number of individuals who were athletes as young adults. And in order to be at the caliber that they were at, they had to make a significant amount of sacrifice. And for that sport, in that moment, that made sense. However, if they keep that same belief, they will disregard signs and only catch them when things are further down at the bottom of the tank here. Sometimes it's worth pausing for a moment to explore, what are my beliefs? How do I tend to think about my personal well-being? Am I thinking that, oh, no, I'm fine. I'm super resilient. Everyone's telling me all the time that I'm the rock of the family, the rock of the team. I'm that person. It's all good. I'm going to be that rock. If that's you, maybe the next step is to consider that, number one, no, you're not a rock, you're human. And therefore, in which ways would you catch it if your resilience was to come lower down? When in previous moments in your life, you've been really struggling with a lot, maybe it didn't go down to the bottom of your tank, but it did go down a bit. How did you notice it? And that's now the sign you want to pay attention to. Just know your top three signs and pay attention to them. That's all.
Yeah. So I often think of it like the dashboard light that says check engine on your car. Do you keep driving? Do you just ignore that? I was recently speaking to an organization and a number of the guys are like, yeah, I just keep driving. I just ignore it. Sometimes we're so detached from listening to our bodies that we do not pay attention.
What I'm seeing more and more is people just creating a practice, a rule for themselves that they're going to check in once a year with a professional. So that way, they still can maintain what they do the way they do it. But once a year, they make themselves check in, or once a quarter, depending on the demand. Sometimes they'll say, oh, actually, you might check in a bit earlier, much like you bring your car to the garage at a certain frequency, say in November at this amount of kilometers, and maybe you're going to reach these kilometers earlier, so you need to go earlier. So similarly, maybe I'm planning to do my next check-in in 6 months from now, but a number of things and pile up from both the personal and the professional side, and I'm actually going to plan for a check-in at the end of August instead, before I launch for the fall. Get someone, get a psychologist, counselor, so that you can do your check-in.
I love that idea, just proactively, because often we wait till it gets really bad and then people are booking appointments because they're desperate. Yet, if we can be doing this early and frequently, I just want to review how things are going. Am I finding balance? Am I holding myself to my goals? And it's a great way to get some feedback from somebody else. Yeah.
Yes.
Great idea. I also think about, as we are going through life, there are some practices that we can build in, and mindset is a big part of that. I think about fixed mindset versus growth mindset. I wonder if you would speak to that a little bit for those who have not heard that before.
Oh, yes. In a nutshell, the fixed mindset tends to see things in a fixed way. If I just tried to do something and it absolutely did not work, I failed, it's not working, it's not in me, I'm not competent at doing this thing. And a growth mindset would instead be focused on a learning opportunity, a way to grow and learn from this situation. If I tried this thing, it didn't work, I would say, what can I learn from this? What can I try next time? Feel good on me for having tried it. I'm going to keep going. And that's the basis level. This is the difference. It goes deeper than this. It influences how even our brain will react in a tough situation. For example, let's say a challenge occurs. Something happens that you don't know how to solve right now. It's a problem. It needs a solution. And we don't know what the solution is right this second. If we go into the, this is a problem, we have no idea how to solve it, it's insolvable. There's no solution to this. This is the end of the world. Now we're going into a bit more of this fixed mindset. We're also going into nourishing the alarm system in the brain that's saying, okay, MH is in danger right now. There is a big problem. The alarm center goes, it releases all the hormones in the stress response, and it's all I can do right now. Feel stressed about it. If instead, same situation happens, and even if you have no idea how to solve for this, if you manage your brain, you say, okay, I have no idea how to solve for this right now. You could even acknowledge your own emotions about it. I have no idea how to solve this right now, and I will find a solution. You still don't know what the solution is, but that's what you're now giving to your brain. You're persuading your brain. The term comes from Dr. Robert Cialdini, author of a book also called Persuasion. You're persuading your brain in advance that you will find a solution. Part of what this does, it calms down the alarm center because now the brain's saying, oh, look at her. She's facing something, but she's saying she's going to find a solution. So alarm center can calm down. The brain functions better individually, all the parts and together, then leading to a much better frame of mind, literally, to find a solution and be even more resilient.
So good. It sends the message of possibility. It doesn't close the door. This is an ending somehow, or this is a failure, but more of hope. There's going to be possibilities. I just don't know what they are yet. And even that mindset gives us the chance to make some other decisions once we allow our nervous system to calm down a little bit, get back into our prefrontal cortex. I do think that mindset is a big part of resilience, and I'm glad that we get to speak about it, because I think that in itself, if people just picked that to practice with for a time and notice how often they might go to that catastrophic thinking versus the possibilities and how that could shift the outcome and decisions that are made.
Yes, we're still recognizing we're not making ourselves believe that everything is fine and there isn't any issue that needs to be resolved. We're very realistic about it. We're also helping the brain go in the direction where we want to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. So a lot of people have a challenge of perfectionism and are afraid to try things. I wonder if you would speak to the importance of failing forward and failing often.
Yes, yes. Sometimes that perfectionist mindset, it's almost worth for each of us, if you feel like it connects to you, to look at where it might be coming from for you. It comes from different places for different people. If it is coming from having heard this so much when you were young, from your parents or whoever was around you helping raise you, if it came from a sport that you practiced, if it came from validation you received in school or in other places, taking a moment to get this for yourself helps, because now you're giving yourself visibility on where it resides and the choice of not necessarily have it reside here, and you can make your own choices. Sometimes that's work you do on your own. Sometimes you can do it even with a professional. It does not take forever. It may just sometimes need two brains together to work on it, to clarify and then move forward. Most people will recognize that they want to do the best job they possibly can. It gets mixed with, therefore, it needs to be perfect. And that's the piece that needs to be teased out often to help them see all the ways in which they have not been perfect so far. Nothing terrible actually happened. It depends, again, what needs each person has, but the more we can almost practice not doing things at the absolute best level all the time can increase comfort with that state and realizing it's fine. Sometimes, literally, it goes into extremely simple things, the way you would usually clean up your kitchen after a meal. You like to do it in a certain way, whatever that is. Some people, very high level of cleaning and some different levels. But whatever your level is, you could play with bringing it a bit lower and seeing that nothing terrible is going to happen. That not only has value for ourselves, but even people around you. If there are children around you, yours or other people's, taking sometimes a moment to say, this, I don't need to do it to the absolute highest level. It's fine. Helps us relax a bit about it and change that expectation. Sometimes the challenge is that if someone really enjoys the very high level of performance, trying to convince them to let that go is very unappealing. Nothing terrible happened as a result of it not being perfect. In fact, good. Other things happened. Many years ago, I started volunteering for a fabulous nonprofit that is still my charity of choice, Dress for Success. Like any charity of choice, there is at some point some fundraising to be done. And sometimes I would try to obtain funds and I would not get a yes, which felt like a full failure. I spoke to people who had been there for much longer than me in the organization and how their frame of it was just, you're bringing an opportunity for them to give. And maybe they will give, maybe they will not give. You're bringing an opportunity. If you're bringing it to people and everyone says yes, that means you're not bringing it to enough people. Keep going, Image. Oh, look at that reframe. And that set me off on that other path. And then I experimented with it and that changed my mindset on that.
The reframe is so critical. I'm glad that you got to that because often we can look at it from many different perspectives, but we don't. We might go to that first sense of failure or that sense of not having done as well as we would have liked to. Yet every time we try something and we experiment, we learn something if we allow ourselves to hang on to that learning. It's just a matter of landing there briefly and being able to unpack it a bit to understand the gifts in that. We don't often allow ourselves that chance to even capture it.
I know. It's literally the gem part of this for two reasons. Number one, the celebration, because we're so quick to move to the next thing. Number one, the celebration. Oh, I did this, which usually I would not have done that way at all. So number one, celebration. Good on me. I tried it. And then number two, which is also what you were referring to, is letting it sink, like to really realize, allow the brain to see the path that I just took so it can take it again. If we quickly move, well, we forget about it and we have to learn it again next time. The more we, number one, celebrate, because that helps, positive. Mm-hmm. And number two, let it sink so that we really anchor it, allow the brain to remember it, then we can use that path again.
It's where some of the greatest insights can be. To learn about ourselves along the way, if we are always shooting for that high standard, we may not try new things. We may not be willing to stretch ourselves. And it speaks to the importance of getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And accepting it too. Sometimes it means the same thing, but I know sometimes I've talked to people and getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. What do you mean? It is uncomfortable. It's then almost a reframe, but really it's just accepting to be in the less comfortable range of experience And again, noticing that nothing terrible happens. In fact, if we feel it, then it will increase our motivation to try something different and to make changes. Otherwise, it keeps us in the much less self-aware and that are there or that we're just not listening to. To some degree, it is being comfortable with being uncomfortable or accepting that part of the range that's very useful for us to have.
Yeah, so good. There's so many pieces to resilience that we could dive into. And I just thought for today, we could land on a few that would be about early intervention, building our skills, building our confidence in ourselves, and recognizing that it is something we need to keep practicing at. It's not a one and done. Sometimes we get to this place in life where we feel like, I'm pretty resilient. I've been through a lot. But we can never really stop leaning into that because what has served us so far, we may need something new around the corner like we did during the pandemic. I'm curious what you've been learning about yourself as you've been doing this work around resilience.
I've certainly been reminded that it's not because a lot of the research that it acts as a vaccine of some sort. No, it doesn't. We're all human. Certainly had that reminder. You're talking about how resilience is something that is not a personality trait. It is something that will nourish, that will then go higher and then more demands come and goes a bit lower. So it evolves over time. Probably over the course of our lives, if we allow the learning, the experiences to stay with us, it's probably going to trend up overall, but still with them some ups and downs. This brings me to my learning about the wonderful benefits of being flexible with how you nourish it. And it connects also even possibly to your comment about perfectionism, because we do know from research of the kinds of things that will influence our resilience significantly, like physical activity, cardio, strength training, meditative type activity, the nutrition, the sleep, the connections. I'll think, okay, I don't have the half hour that I was planning to go for a brisk walk. So therefore, no walk today. Out the window. For me, it has meant that what was a half hour could become a 15 minute. That's my second best option. But sometimes it is a quarter of the street and back. And I even have the 1 minute version of stand outside for 5 deep breaths, come back in. The key thing for something like this is that, of course, you're not going to get the same benefits for the very scaled down version compared to the large version from a physical health perspective. From a psychological health perspective, however, you're getting much more by doing the 5 deep breaths standing outside here versus zero. Because I've maintained my habit and that I've experienced it. It changes everything. I would say is one active learning process that I think is pretty cool and works well.
That's a great example. And not beating yourself up because you couldn't do the full version, but to accept that time won't allow for the full one, but at least the smaller version of what I'd hoped achieve today or to take care of myself is still effective in some way or another. So good. MH, is there any other resilience practices that you have come to rely on that we haven't talked about today that maybe are just specific that you've learned to trust for you?
Yes, I'll share one with you. Most people have full lives. Often tying a habit to an existing habit is very easy. You're already doing this other behavior, so we're just being strategic about tying another habit with it. Most people have become better at during and post-pandemic is to wash our hands for a bit longer. One possibility may be to take this opportunity anytime you wash your hands to take 5 deep breaths. It will be the same amount of time, changes nothing to your schedule. But if you start pairing this habit, you're basically incorporating small doses of meditation. That's what I've been using. Not all the time. Sometimes I don't do it, Cindy. But sometimes. And the more I do it, the better. And it's something that is very easy for all of us to incorporate and contributes to the overall equation.
I appreciate your mentioning it. Thank you for sharing one of your practices that you've built in. I love the atomic habit philosophy and building on the habits we currently have to just slowly add in new ones. That's a nice, easy one. And I'm sure the listeners will appreciate just a simple practice that we can try out and experiment with. Yeah. I really appreciate your taking some time to be here with us today and to share your knowledge with our listeners. I have no doubt that there's always some little gem that people might hear, even hear differently if they've heard it before. Sometimes it's timing. It's about when we hear it in the right time in our lives that we're ready and needing that particular skill. You've given us so many to consider today. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Cindy. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure, too. Thank you. I feel that each guest has a unique offering to this podcast, whether it is a humanistic story or the wisdom of experts in the field. We are all juggling the events that come our way and finding our way through. There are so many aspects to the field of resilience. The more I learn, the more I realize there's yet to be learned. Tapping into the experience and practices MH has curated over time, it is such a privilege to learn from her. I hope you get as excited as I do about these conversations. This is the point in the podcast where I draw out some of the highlights from my conversation with MH. With such a dynamic combination of experience, I wish I had more time to dive into these themes. First of all, she reminded us that our nutritional and gut health can have an impact on our psychological health. I think this will be worthy of a future episode. When tackling the fixed mindset and moving into a growth mindset, we need to manage our brains. Saying something like, "I will find a solution," calms the alarm center of your brain and allows you to adopt a growth mindset. This is where the solutions can come through and you are less likely to get stuck in that negative story. For the perfectionists out there, try taking the perspective that you will do the best job you possibly can. Understanding this is a practice that may take some time, a kinder approach, and slowly you will get to rewire your brain. Also, MH mentioned to celebrate the positives. When we recognize how far we have come, we will feel encouraged and willing to see the possibilities. Acceptance. Accept that there's going to be times that we spend that is in a less comfortable range of experience. It increases our motivation to try something different and embrace a wide range of experiences. Flexibility. As we create habits, there will be times when you are unable to live up to that expectation or goal. Being flexible means that we might have to skip a day or only achieve part of that goal, and that we trust that we will continue our practice the next day. MH used the example of taking a few minutes to step outside in the fresh air and taking 5 deep breaths. She may not have been able to do the walk she had planned, but it still helps. MH also mentioned that it's important to maintain some version of your habit until you have time for that full practice. And try tying your habit to an existing habit. For example, washing your hands and taking 5 deep breaths. There were so many gems, it's hard to narrow it down to just a few. As we start to wrap up this episode, I would like to leave you with 2 questions and 1 quote. What habits are you going to add to your resilience plan? And who could be on your team to ensure your well-being? I need you to set up a schedule with a counselor, coach, or a friend that understands the mission and is willing to meet with you once a month or once every 6 months as a check-in. And in the words of Brian Tracy, be clear about your goal, but be flexible about the process of achieving it. If you've been enjoying this podcast, I invite you to rate and comment on your preferred podcast platform. This enables us to get direct feedback and ensure that we are bringing you more of what you love. And remember, friends, adversity is inevitable while resilience is a practice. Thank you for listening to this episode of A Resilience Project. We would not be doing this podcast without you. If you or someone you know has an inspirational story or is helping to build resilience in their community, please email me at cindy@aresilienceproject.com. In fact, email me either way. I would love to hear from you. My hope is to feature an episode periodically on your letters of resilience. I'm very interested in hearing your story of how you have tackled hard things and what worked for you. With your permission, I hope to share some of these stories along the way with our listeners. Also, check out my website, aresilienceproject.com, to learn more about our amazing guests. Your presence here is important because together we are cultivating a village of resilient individuals. You are creating a space for their stories to be shared and a sacred space for learning to occur. I also have a favor. I would love for you to go to your preferred podcast platform, rate and review the podcast so that we will know how we're doing. I also would like to express my gratitude to the amazing team of volunteers that have jumped on board to support this project. You will find each of those beautiful people on my website on the team page. As you go about this week, I invite you to think about one way that you can continue to grow your resilient muscle. What is one thing you can start with today? See you next week.